Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odds. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, we ready for Revs talk?
No.
No?
Okay.
Well, it seems to me that that might be the only thing that generates some interest. You know, it's kind of quiet.
Well, they're the only New England team that played this weekend.
That's also possibly true. Well, we welcome you back inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. I'm ready to play football. Can we play tomorrow?
If we play right now, if you want.
I'd like to. Well, they're out there practicing right now.
They are.
So, I mean, that's a good thing.
You guys can have a little one-on-one automatic QB game?
Look, we should have a paper football tournament. You know that? We should have
a
PFW.
A few years ago.
Did they do a paper football tournament?
Yeah.
Who won?
Media football thing.
I remember the media football thing. No, yeah. I'm talking about finger flick football, paper football, you know? my son, when he was in middle school, that's all they used to do is do that. It reminded me of me when I was in middle school. And so we used to do that all the time. You know, you'd fold
attention,
the little...
you were all losers.
No. This was total fun because you could, you know, totally and completely sandbag people in this thing. Make some lunch money.
You poke somebody's eye out with that thing.
Oh, man, that's great. Do you know how to fold a paper football?
Yes.
Okay. All right, just wondering, just asking.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, undoubtedly. I just...
Last trip back from London, right?
Yeah. Still get a little...
Across the aisle, no?
No.
You didn't do it across the aisle?
No.
You know, throwing things at each other?
Mm-hmm.
No? It was actually quite similar?
I had a window seat and... two extra seats to myself on the flight back. So
wow.
I got to stretch out.
You got to lay out.
I got to lay out. It was great. But even the flight there, it was. I had the window.
That's
there
impressive.
Was a middle seat, and Andy was on the aisle. And we had plenty of room. I thought that was a dream come true, because usually we're scrunched together on the flight.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way home, I was supposed to sit with one of the equipment guys, and he ended up, there was an extra row of four in the middle of the plane that was empty, and he went and sat over there, so I had the thing to myself. It was great.
Wow.
It's great. I love it.
That's very impressive, by the way. Very impressive.
Yeah.
Especially since that kind of thing is only reserved for the, you know, linemen and, you know,
yeah, usually
veteran performers.
We had an enormous Virgin Atlantic plane, though.
No,
so
well,
that
makes a lot of sense, though.
A lot of extra seats.
Well, I guess, you know, I watched, you know, most
you
of the
watched
game.
The
I watched
Dolphins
the Jets-Dolphins game. I can't say that I'm totally shocked by the outcome. I was kind of
I was a little surprised by the outcome.
Well, I was kind of sort of halfway rooting for the Dolphins anyway, just because.
Well, standings-wise, yeah.
Standings-wise, that puts, you know, the Jets a little further behind the Patriots. It's funny, though. The Jets now are 1-0 against the Patriots and 0-3 against the rest of the division.
Yeah, and the Dolphins are 3-0 in the division, I believe.
Yeah, so now you know that puts a little bit more. And frankly, I'm kind of glad this should put a little bit more focus on this Sunday's game, because now if the Dolphins somehow come in here and win on Sunday, not only do they pull within one game over all the standings, but they have an almost insurmountable lead within the division.
Yeah.
The Patriots would be 0-2. The Dolphins would be 4-0.
Right. You know what? There's a little fly in that ointment. Chad Henne is the quarterback of the Dolphins. He's awful.
Well, apparently they're getting it done with somebody, though.
Yeah. That offense was not impressive against the Jets.
Well,
they scored 30 points because Jason Taylor scored a touchdown. Ted Ginn ran two kickoffs back. I'm not scared of this team, honestly.
How much do the Jets really miss that defensive line? I mean, that's
certainly they're hurting in a lot of ways. But, you know, Sanchez is also a rookie quarterback. Let's not forget. He's played well, and he had a great start to his career.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not forget, he's a rookie quarterback. He's going to go through periods like this.
Right.
You know, they were calling him the Sanchez after three games. But, he's going to be good, but he's still a rookie.
Right.
And they have a rookie head coach.
Right.
And they have injuries that are mounting up.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to be a lot different when they come to Foxborough in a few weeks.
No question. I just this is sort of the return of the week that started it all last year with the you know, the Dolphins unveiling the Wildcat formation, and you
nobody's
know,
someone, surprised by that anymore.
No, but at the same time, though, this sort of, you know, should bring back, you know, some memories. Number one, not all of them positive. Number two, we've seen the Wildcat picked up by many other teams, both college and pro, since this point in time a year ago when the Dolphins last came in here.
Yep.
And the way that they controlled everything with the Patriots last year, you have to feel like A, the Patriots have to be spending some time working on that this week.
Oh, sure.
B, the Dolphins are undoubtedly going to unveil something completely different we haven't seen before, and I'm reading into that, say, Pat White as a quarterback option back there,
probably,
potentially.
Probably.
And number three,
to add more of a throwing option to that.
Right. Well, that's the next thing that's got to go, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it sounds to me like when you're playing old single-wing football, rather than just dial it back 4 or 5 decades when everybody was single-winging with direct snaps and such, you know, the thing that makes the Wildcat that much more dangerous is the ability to throw out of it.
Of course.
Obviously, Ronnie Brown showed that to the Patriots last year when
right.
they were here.
Right.
Because the Patriots didn't know what the hell was coming at them. But now that the Dolphins went out and specifically drafted a guy like Pat White to perhaps play that position as a run-pass option, because he was a magnificent running quarterback in college
yeah.
at West Virginia.
Yeah.
I saw him play all 4 years
exactly.
up close and personal. And I'm thinking, you know what, I'd take a shot at that guy as a regular NFL QB, much less a Wildcat. He could certainly be a backup somewhere.
Well, yeah, they in the conference calls yesterday, Bill and Nick Caserio and those guys, they were asked about Pat White specifically mm-hmm. and how you scouted him. You know, was he scouted as a Wildcat player, as a running back, a receiver, whatever? The Patriots scouted him and ranked him as a quarterback.
As a quarterback, yeah.
So well, they obviously saw what you saw, John.
Well, if that's the case, then sounds to me like they should be preparing for Pat White this week in some of those packages.
And I think it's to their advantage that they had the bye week this past week, because now they have this extra day, this rare Tuesday where they're practicing. So they have now 5 straight days where they can prepare for this team. And given that they have this new option that they didn't have last year, I think it helps the Patriots that they have the extra time to prepare for
it. No doubt, Eric. And I would be stunned if the Patriots didn't come out with guns blazing and ready to chomp on everything and drop big ones on the Dolphins. They should be champing at the bit, basically ready to go against, you know, whatever kind of a package the Dolphins throw if they're doing their homework. That's one of the things that I'm looking forward to most as a Patriots fan, to see how well that they've been, you know, prepared. Number one. Number two, I want to see the Patriots proactive in terms of game planning against the Dolphins defense as well.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, the offense is starting to come together, I think, John, even though there's still some uncertainty at wide receiver, a little bit of uncertainty at running back. You've got a couple of, you know, the injury to Matt Light. You have a rookie playing left tackle. There's still question marks on the offense, but each week I see them getting better. You know, there are some elements that you've got Tate now getting worked into the offense a little bit. Brady's getting back to his old self. I'm not feeling as I don't want to say pessimistic, but I'm not feeling as worried as I was earlier in the year that this offense wasn't going to get on the same page,
right?
Because of all the question marks.
Sure.
We're at the midway mark, and things are starting to go along as expected.
I would have to say yes, a little bit, and then that puts a little bit more of an emphasis, I think, on this Sunday, because we know, and we've talked about extensively over the course of the last couple of weeks, the gauntlet that the Patriots have to run through this month
is going to be tough.
Of November is just, it's unbelievable. You've got, you know, Miami here, then you're going to go on the road and play Indy, then you're going to come back home and play the Jets, who've already beaten you once, and then you're going to go on the road and play Indianapolis.
This is a January preview.
No doubt.
This is a playoff preview.
No doubt.
This whole month is going to be that way.
That's why every game is important, but this one's more important because it's at home, and it's within the division.
Yep.
So this is one that, you know, obviously this is a game that has to have the proverbial target hanging from it. A couple of things to get to today, and as I mentioned with Fred just before PFW Progress was over, trying to give some thought, because this is obviously the exact halfway point in the season. Now, we're between weeks, what is it, 8 and 9?
It's
a 17-week season.
Right.
So, you know, we're halfway through the season as of actually probably technically tomorrow being, you know, the middle of the week.
Right.
Trying to take stock a little bit in where the Patriots are. And we've kind of talked around this over the last few weeks, 5-2, are you happy at the midway point, yada, yada. And you kind of feel like there was an opportunity to be a little bit better, but you take into consideration Brady's comeback and some of the injuries that have been there and just and the schedule and everything that's played out. 5-2 is certainly, I think, a palpable situation. But I wanted to look at it more from an individual point of view. Two players. I want you to pick two players on this roster, on this Patriots roster right now. And I'm not necessarily thinking, you know, all pro, but somebody who, in your estimation, has contributed above and beyond. So I want you to give a thumbs up to one Patriots player, and then I want you to give a thumbs down to another Patriots player that has been a disappointment in your eyes. Not what you've heard from Coach Belichick, and you're not going to hear much from him anyway, or from anybody else in the media, but based on your observations of the team, and everyone who's tuned in today, all Patriots fans are tuned in today, when you've seen these guys play, whether it's been overseas or what have you, when you've had a chance to witness what they've done, who surprised you in a positive and a negative sense? I want you to give me a thumbs up to one player and a thumbs down to another one at the midway point of the 2009 NFL season. Now, it could be somebody you think has played like an all-pro, and I've got a couple of guys in mind. And as far as the thumbs down is concerned, it could be a quote-unquote bust, if that's what you think the guy is, you know, destined to be. Doesn't necessarily have to be. I'm looking for a thumbs up and thumbs down. I'm trying to kind of make this as broad as possible because I think that there are several candidates. In fact, I even think that there could be candidates that you could qualify for both categories if you really took a good hard look at it. So I'll let you stew on that for a little bit, Eric, unless you're ready to fire off with a couple of names. Andy shot a couple of names off really quick, which is fine, and I can't say that I necessarily disagree with his premise. But let's put some thought behind this. Why is this person a thumbs up?
Putting the gun to my head? Is that what you're doing, Jason?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for you to fire him off.
Why is this person a thumbs up, and then why is this person a thumbs down?
I can think of a couple off the top of my head.
Okay.
I agree with one Andy said, Brandon McGowan.
Okay.
Clearly out of the blue. I mean, his stock shot up very quickly. Mm-hmm. It was only 2 weeks, and he was in the starting lineup,
right.
And he's maintained that. And, you know, at the expense of James Sanders, who we all like and we all think is a good player.
Right.
But McGowan clearly is playing above and beyond what anybody kind of expected. He, you know, think back to training camp. He sort of quietly went about his business and didn't really make much fanfare mm-hmm. in training camp. Was hurt a little bit here and there, but he wasn't a guy where at the end of the summer you were thinking, boy, I can't wait to see McGowan play.
Yeah.
But he was just
didn't
there.
Know much about
he
it.
Was there the whole time.
He we didn't know just, much about him.
He was just kind of there. And then all of a right. sudden, once the regular season kicked in, so did he.
Sure.
So I think he's pretty much, I think, I'd say that's a unanimous vote, if you ask anybody, for a surprise contributor who's deserves a thumbs up.
All right.
Certainly Brandon McGowan. I'd also, as a second sort of a runner-up to that, I'd put Benjamin Watson in that category.
Really?
I think he's played a little bit better than expected.
He's one of those guys that I could put in both categories without too much of a problem. I think because so
I
much
think
is
he's
always
his best year
so much
far.
Is always expected of him though.
But I think this year so little was expected of him. He wasn't even expected to make this team, John. And yet at the end of the summer he was on it. He hasn't started every game. It's sort of been every other game.
Mm-hmm.
But yet he's certainly having more production at this point than Chris Baker, and I think everybody expected Chris Baker to be that guy this year. He's on pace to have his best career as a Patriot right now.
Okay.
At the halfway point. I think part of it is that the expectations for him were so low. You know, I remember standing at his locker at the end of the last preseason game, and all the questions from the media were, you know, was this your last game as a Patriot? Where do you stand? This and that. And he took all those questions. You know, I give him a lot of credit. He stood there and was man about it and took every question and said, you know what, whether it's here or somewhere else, you know, I'm confident I'll be playing in this league. And I think he's gotten to the point where he's just relaxed enough that he's playing well and he's healthy, which hasn't been the case in every other season. He has yet to play a 16-game slate.
True.
As a pro.
True.
So I'd say, you know what, if things can keep up for him like this, he'll definitely deserve an up arrow at the end of the year.
Okay.
Or thumbs up.
Yeah, thumbs up, right. Okay. Very good. Well, we want you to contribute. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address, of course, and that's how you reach us here on the program. If you'd like to call into the program, you may do so. 508-543-7482. Again, it's area code 508-543-7482 inside the playbook. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Well, one player on each side.
Obvious thumbs down is the guy who's not here anymore, Joey Galloway. Huge expectations for this guy. And he was inactive for half the time he was here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not here anymore, so I don't really want to give him a thumbs down because he's not really part of the team. I want to go with somebody who's still on the team.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, Andy mentioned Adalis Thomas. He's been, you know, a popular whipping boy since he's gotten here because he's got the fat contract and he hasn't really done consistently.
He has not been an impact player like we thought he would be.
Not consistently.
No.
At times he can. And when he does... When he is that player, you can see why he was courted the way he was, but he hasn't done it consistently.
I was ready before we learned what was it earlier today. I was ready to give a thumbs down to Jarvis Green, but now, as it turns out, there's a reason, perhaps, why Jarvis hasn't been quite the impact type of player that we thought. He's been playing with a torn meniscus in his knee, and he had surgery to clean it out this past week, unbeknownst to many of us, if not all of us.
Yep, good job by our colleague and friend, Tom Curran.
Tom Curran from
Comcast Sportsnet
right.
New England.
And so he reported earlier today on the website that it was a meniscus cleaning operation that he had, and there apparently is some conjecture as to how long Jarvis Green will be out of the mix.
Actually, let's be clear, just to our friends here. Tom reported that he had surgery.
Yes.
Albert Breer of the Globe reported that it was specifically meniscus.
Okay, very good.
From the two reports that I read.
That's actually, you're absolutely right. He's the one that reported it was meniscus,
right?
Which is basically cartilage, and you're just kind of cleaning out the
and,
whole.
And 2 to 4 weeks is what we're hearing in the media reports that I've read.
Right.
So anywhere from the Colts game next Sunday to sometime in early December.
Early December, yeah, right.
Which, you know, I guess the thinking is better get it done now, give him some time to heal, even though it's a tough stretch coming up. Better now, weather this storm, and then have him for the end of the season in the playoffs.
You're fortunate now that you actually have some depth, especially not just in the defensive line, but in the linebacking core, where you know you can go and you can play the 3-4 defense, and you're really not missing anything, which is what I think everybody anticipates this team will probably do, that Mike Wright will step in for Jarvis because he's been lined up, I think, at end quite a bit.
Well, you also might see a lot, John, I think, of 3-3.
All right.
Because they've been playing a lot of three safeties.
3-3-5?
3-3-5, because McGowan, Merriweather, and Chung, sometimes Chung and Sanders are now splitting time.
Right.
But you've been seeing a lot of that five, you know, nickel package where there are three safeties. Sometimes they throw a third corner in there for a nickel or even go to a dime package. But I think you're right. Because of injuries and depth, they've had to sort of finagle their way through their formations for the first seven games.
Right.
And, I wouldn't be surprised if they do some 3-3 and just...
Funny, that's what University of West Virginia plays, a 3-3-5 stack full-time. That's what they do all the time.
That's their base?
That's their base defense. Three down linemen, three linebackers, five defensive backs, and they have one defensive back, and most of the time it is and they do split, actually, time between either a safety, where they would make him like a rover back, like a monster back, you've heard, guy that basically is a floating linebacker back there, or what they call a boundary corner. You know, so it's kind of funny, but that's kind of the defense, you know, that I would not be surprised to see the Patriots run.
So their corner is sort of like he takes the middle of the field, slot guys on either side?
Correct.
Doesn't go past the hashes usually?
Nope. Boundary corner, that's what it's known as. In effect, it's a safety, but, I mean, that's what they've termed it, a corner, because he does have specific requirements and specific receivers he has to target.
Yeah, if you have a Wes Welker guy on the other side, he's covering
within
him.
His boundary, that's his assignment, as opposed to a safety, where a safety is supposed to go and help out off of others.
Yeah.
So that's really the difference in the terminology, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
So that's how it will work.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see that kind of thing.
Right.
More often
That'd
in the
be
next few weeks.
Well, you know, they've got the bodies, and they've certainly got the players, I think, that can play that type of position.
And they're also playing teams that we know are going to pass the ball.
Well,
Indianapolis,
true.
The Jets, the Colts, the Saints, Miami again at the end. You're going to need athletic guys to get around to try to, whether they pass out of that wildcat, whether it's bringing a safety slash linebacker type like McGowan up to the line to.
But it's also going to be absolutely imperative for, you know, the front three to put some heat on the quarterback.
Well, yeah, and
I mean this is the downside to playing a defense like that. And a lot of times you find, and collegiately is how I can speak from experience here, seeing West Virginia play that kind of a defense, they do bring linebacker blitzes quite a bit. So it stands to reason that, you know, unless somehow the front three can make a dent, they're going to have to be bringing somebody somewhere.
And that's a lament we've had for the past 3-4 years, John. We haven't consistently gotten to the quarterback. And I don't know if that's going to change overnight after a bye week, but you're right. It does. It needs to. That's a glaring weakness on this defense. They need to get more pressure on opposing quarterbacks. But it's going to be tough against these teams. Like, you know, Peyton Manning's a quick thrower. Drew Brees is going to get the ball out of there. You know, I mean, you got to. It's going to be a tough challenge. Quick quiz for you, John.
Shoot.
Who leads the Pats in sacks right now?
Is it Mike Wright?
It is Mike Wright,
yeah.
With 4 sacks.
Yeah, I thought it was him. But he's the one that's probably going to end up benefiting from Jarvis Green being
out the most, I would think, right?
Yeah,
he's been backing up Green on the right side, and where Jarvis has been lined up in that former Richard Seymour spot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yeah, you're going to see more Mike Wright in the next few weeks. He even said so today. He talked a little bit today in the locker room. And
well, the one thing that I've been impressed about with Mike Wright, and I guess he is deserving of a thumbs up as well in some circles here, is the fact that he seems to have improved quite a bit on his quickness off the snap of the ball. In other words, his first step is getting by offensive linemen, whereas mm-hmm. in the past he's been more of a run plugger. Now he's more of a penetrator, and
yeah.
I think that's where he's really improved his game.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably accurate. And I think a lot of that is because he's such a utility guy. He's been forced to have to learn how to play inside run stuff technique and outside pass rush type move kind of. So he has more of a repertoire just out of necessity because he has to plug in so many positions along that line. And I think you're right. I think we're seeing the fruits of that now after, you know, guy was a free agent, rookie free agent, has carved out a pretty good career for himself.
So far, you'd have to say, so far. That's very true. So, anyway, that's the latest with the team, with the whole Jarvis Green story, the fact that he apparently had a little knee surgery to try to clean up some things. And the team, even though, you know, they are entering, as Eric has pointed out, a relatively difficult stretch, I think inarguably the most difficult stretch of the season, they're going to have to do it without him. But at least they would potentially have him back for the stretch run. Probably knowing that they're going to need every win in December just as much as they're going to need the wins in November, because they'll have a division hopefully to clinch at that time and some momentum to build for the potential playoff run in January.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that on the horizon. You have to feel, I think, a little bit better about the way that the offense was beginning to round into shape, even though admittedly the game in London was not their best game.
No.
But the fact remains is that, you know, Brady and company seem to be another step closer in a lot of instances to being the type of offense that we expected that we would see, you know, from 2007.
Yeah, it's happening at about the time when you expect it to happen. You know, we've talked on the show in the past, John, about how the first four games, you can break the season into quarters. The first four games, you kind of... You know, it's hard to make a judgment after four games. After eight games, you kind of have a better sense of where you are as a team.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of that third quarter, after, you know, 12 games or so, you know who you are.
Right.
And then at the end of the season, it's just a matter of maintaining that or even trying to improve a little bit if you're a playoff team. And I think at this point in the season, I think we know what the Patriots are. They're certainly a more balanced offense, I think, than they were a year or certainly 2 years ago, where they were pass first all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Their mix is now a lot closer to 50-50 run pass than it was even at the beginning of the season. So you have to give a little bit of kudos to the running game for actually sticking with it, and that's helping open up a little bit more in the passing game, I think, because now you have that legitimate threat, play action, whatnot. So
are we concerned about the running game at all just because of the injuries?
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, because you have injuries there and you have guys who are, you know, you have Maroney, who's always a question mark, and you have Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, who looks good when he gets the time. but he doesn't always get in there. Kevin Faulk is still plugging along, but it'd be nice to get that extra depth back with Morris and Taylor, but I have a feeling we're not going to see them.
Do we have any ideas to when?
I haven't heard any prognosis on
what have
Morris.
You seen in the locker room?
Taylor, you know, we heard possibly in December, so I wasn't expecting him to be back until that stretch run.
Right, right.
But Morris, we haven't heard word one of any
Have you seen him in the locker room at all?
Have not.
Wow.
Have not. Whereas, as opposed to guys like Matt Light, who we've seen a couple of times since the Denver game when he got his knee injured, and he has been seen without any braces and without any noticeable limp of any kind, and seems like he's coming along, but he hasn't been at practice, so not quite sure what to make of that. I mean, he wasn't out there today either, but again, they have an extra day to practice this week. Maybe we'll see him later this week. Maybe by the Colts game he'll be back. Just from looking at him, just the eyeball test, I'd say probably next week.
Mm. Can you give us an update on who was present
yeah,
today
sure.
and
yeah.
The practice update today anyway?
Seven guys missing. The notable ones were ones that weren't that were in attendance last time we saw them. Adalis Thomas and Jonathan Wilhite. Both of those guys were out today.
Hmm.
And again, it's early in the week with an extra day of practice. Maybe we're reading too much into it. We'll see as the week goes on. But those two are out, and five others, the usual ones, Edelman, Taylor, Morris, Light, and Jarvis Green just getting the knee scope. So,
right.
And they were in full pads today, probably because they have a lot to work on. They have the extra time to work on Wildcat stuff. Might as well let it go full speed.
Absolutely.
You don't get opportunities like this.
No, you don't.
During the regular season.
That's exactly right. So it's probably a teaching day, if anything else, out on the field.
A quick little note, too. They made a transaction. Their practice squad tight end, they replaced one with another. Robbie Anyon was placed on the injured practice squad list with a shoulder injury. They signed a guy, Rob Myers, played at Utah State. So he's now on the practice squad wearing number 80. Looks like he just came in today, too. He was getting all his locker.
Well, I know
stuff
that they had actually gone through some tryouts over the course of the last couple of days, and Myers was one
running
of those
backs
guys,
and
right?
tight ends. Yeah.
Right.
And I believe Myers was one.
And of the group, Myers was the one they ended up signing. So I think that was the result of the tryouts you may have seen. I know that ProFootballTalk.com had that one posted a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah. So, nothing as far as the active roster at this point, but that is a transaction. And, you know, they only have two tight ends on the roster on game days, so. You know, something to keep an eye on for later on. I mean, with Watson's injury history, I think you always have to have something
probably
extra, or at least an emergency list.
No doubt. All right, webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here on the show. We need you to give us a thumbs up for one Patriots player and a thumbs down for another. Who has met or exceeded your expectations? Who's a big disappointment? Halfway point, thumbs up or thumbs down?
A quick thumbs down.
Okay.
A little bit unfair because I think he's been hurt and trying to struggle with coming back. But Sean Springs, he just hasn't been out there.
That was my choice.
He hasn't really been out there. And again, I think he's dealing with something.
Yeah.
Which is limiting his productivity.
But we don't
so it's
know
a little bit unfair.
I know. And that's, like I said, I was leaning toward giving that to Jarvis Green until I heard what I heard earlier today.
Right.
And so if there's an explanation behind it, that's fine. So this is the downside to not being forthcoming about, you know, injuries and what guys are going through. I realize there are, you know, medical rules and HIPAA laws and things like that that go into play here. But if we don't know what's going on, guys are going to unfairly get hammered. Case in point, Lawrence Maroney. Nobody knew that he had a broken shoulder a year ago. I don't know that really changes my opinion of him, to be quite honest with you.
Well,
but
I mean,
nevertheless,
he did go on IR.
Nevertheless, we never really knew the extent of the injury, you know, until after he was already gone. And so the pervading feeling about a guy like Maroney is going to persist.
Sure,
that's not
sure.
going to help anybody, much less the player. And so if the coach is interested in the player, the coach also needs to understand, and the organization also has to understand, that this being New England, okay, this being a need-to-know region where, you know, we all live, eat, breathe, sleep, die, you know, all that kind of stuff with the team. Sometimes it's in your organization's best interest and your player's best interest to let us know what's going on here.
Yeah, and I guess the argument to be made on the other side, to be devil's advocate, is that it's, you know, what does the organization or the coach care what the fans think about a player?
Absolutely. I totally and completely understand that. But, you know, if you're trying to... you know, continue to, you know, reinforce your fan base, and you're trying to, you know, be, I know you can't be all things to all people, but, you know, even Bill himself said he's a kinder, friendlier, you know, Bill nowadays than he was, you know, when he first started in New England or back in Cleveland. Well, then if you're going to continue to do that, how about, you know, let's continue to evolve, shall we, as a coach and a human being. Would that be a good start, maybe? I don't know. I'm just thinking here, you know. What I would do if I was running a team, and I'm getting off on a tangent here, when we need to take a break, and we'll get into this a little bit more. If it was me running, okay, I'd want to control. Yes, I understand the need for that kind of internal control. However, I would also want to make sure that I had people thinking positively about me, so when things go negative, the negative thoughts aren't pervading. It's kind of like, okay, you know what? In Bill we trust.
Mm-hmm.
And I think less and less people, mm-hmm, fans especially, as media especially that, but fans especially, are as the days go by, I'm not so sure that, you know, it's as much as in Bill we trust as it was, say, a couple of years ago.
I think there's a little bit of a feeling of skepticism because there's been a lack of Super Bowl rings.
Sure.
As
absolutely
there were in the second half of this decade.
That's right. That's absolutely right. You know, now if they go out and they go on and build from here and win this year, okay,
well, then
guess,
yeah,
we'll all shut up.
Sure.
Web radio at Patriots.com. We'll continue with more Inside the Playbook.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
We continue Inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday. Pats, of course, and the Miami Dolphins. We'll go this Sunday here in Foxborough. It's a 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly. Taking your emails, webradio@patriots.com. Need a thumbs up and a thumbs down from you in terms of players you think on this Patriots team that have met or exceeded your expectations or not exceeded your expectations. We'll get to some of those emails here in just a moment. But a couple of notes. Number one, this coming in from Is this NFL.com? No, it's Pro Football Talk. Okay. Guess who the dirtiest players in the league are now that we don't have Rodney Harrison to kick around anymore?
My wife calls me Hot Rod.
Kevin Mawai. Is he on the list?
He's actually fifth on the list.
Fifth.
He's fifth.
Jeremy Shockey?
Nope.
Are these all defense? Other than Mawai?
No.
Really, they're offensive players?
Two are offense.
Two, really? Other than Mawai.
Mm-hmm.
In the top five.
Huh.
I don't know.
Okay, number one. Number one dirtiest player in the NFL. And again, this is a Sports Illustrated poll of NFL players, okay?
Okay.
Number one.
So peers ranking each other.
Yes, peers ranking each other. Number one, Hines Ward.
Dirty player?
Dirty player.
Really?
Yeah. Hines Ward is number one.
Interesting.
Followed by Albert Hainsworth, number two.
I can definitely see that.
Joey Porter, number three.
Easily see that.
So the Miami Dolphins are bringing in Joey this weekend. Yep.
Loudmouth and trash talking and,
correct.
And dirty player. Yeah, I can see
number
that.
Number four was Bengals safety Roy Williams.
As a dirty player?
Dirty player.
Oh.
And number five was Kevin Mawai.
Wow. Funny Kevin Mawai story. When we were, Team PFW was walking through the tunnel out here to go to the press box elevator. And as we were going, we usually go about 2 hours before kickoff. We usually go up to the press box.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were going, passing the visitors' tunnel entrance, Kevin Mawai was coming off the field after just warming up for a few minutes. And now typically players never acknowledge anybody unless they know them personally.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Mawai sees the three of us walking by and he goes, "Hey, fellas, how you doing?"
What's up, Paparillo?
Well, he didn't call him by name, but it took us all off guard because, you know, when you hear all these things about how he's a dirty player and all that, and it completely caught us off guard.
Wow.
Andy was giddy like a schoolgirl at that point. Like, yeah, Kevin Mawai was his favorite player. Very underrated player. Very underrated. You know how Andy is. You could turn on a dime with him.
Yes, this is true.
But that was
somebody paid attention to Andy.
I mean, it was like, and it wasn't even like an extended period where he saw us. Like, he's instantly, as soon as he saw us, he was like, "Hey, guys, what's up?" Weird. Just bizarre.
Had you ever had a chance?
Yeah.
Laughing like a little girl.
Yes.
Had he ever had a chance to interview him before? Anybody?
Never. Well, I mean, we've played when he was with the Jets. We would see him twice a year.
Twice a year, so he would recognize you. Maybe he just recognize you.
Maybe, I don't know. But it was just bizarre because usually, players in this locker room that recognize us rarely say hi to us.
Acknowledge you? No,
yeah.
I know they don't acknowledge anybody. This one comes from Brian, who says, "What do you guys think about the Pats bringing in Chris Chambers? In his EEI interview, Bill said they haven't discussed him yet, but he didn't dismiss it at all when asked. Do you guys think Chambers could be a good number three receiver for the Pats, and would his contract situation even fit for the Pats?"
Well, first of all, Bill's never going to paint himself into a corner one way or the other and say whether he wants somebody or doesn't. So trying to read into anything he says is kind of a fruitless effort. But I think it makes sense only because they have an issue at number three wide receiver. Basically, they are lacking one.
Mm-hmm.
And Chambers is a guy, when he was with Miami, had some big games against this team. And Bill has a history of taking players who have hurt him in the past when they were with other teams and bringing them on board. So I think there's a need, and I think we'll know at 4:00 today whether or not he's cleared waivers. And I think that's a situation where if he can clear waivers, I think they would sign him. I'd be
surprised.
A little
bit of a calculated risk, though, if you take a chance on him clearing waivers, because somebody's liable to put a claim in on the guy.
Of course. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if you take him while on waivers, don't you have to pick up the contract he had?
I'm pretty sure you do, which means if they take a whack at him here,
it's going to be an expensive whack.
It'll be an expensive whack, yeah.
So I think they might feel like, they might feel like they have enough at wide receiver where they can take that risk at the moment, see if he clears waivers, and then try to sign him. I just think I'd be a little surprised if he does clear waivers because I think his production may have fallen off with San Diego, but I think he still can play.
I think he'd be a great get. Absolutely take a stab at it if he can clear waivers. Now, I happen to agree with that premise. Right now, okay, you know, you're bringing Brandon Tate in, you know, so, I mean, okay, let's say, you know, I don't really want to afford the guy. You know, so in that regard, and I'm not sure right off the top of my head what his contract situation is.
We seem to think towards the end it was somewhere around $2 million.
Okay,
maybe.
Well, that's not a heavy number. I'm not sure how far the Patriots are under the cap, to be honest with you, because I don't really keep up with cap stuff.
Fred seemed to think that it would be manageable if they wanted to take the risk.
Well, then okay, that's fine. Maybe they decided, and maybe they will ultimately decide, that they've decided that, you know, bringing in Chambers wasn't enough to take the risk, so let's see if he clears waivers. If he clears waivers, we'll negotiate downward and we'll bring him in. I think that's a good, solid football decision to make.
I would agree. And especially, it'd be kind of a coincidence that they're playing his former team this week. I think that
bring him in, spill the beans.
Yeah, and
but he hadn't been there in a couple of years. So
no. But I'm just from a more of a practical standpoint. They need a number three receiver.
Yes, they do.
And I think, you know, if he can learn the offense quickly enough,
let's create some competition for it. Now that's the other X factor, and we've talked about this several times on this show, especially that, you know, it's hard to make trades. And we talked about this at the trading deadline, because when you bring somebody in, things are so intricate, offensively speaking, in this league now. Unless a guy has a working knowledge of your playbook, it just, you know, once you get past the midway point of the season, it really just doesn't pay.
But here's the thing. The number three receiver on most teams is a slot guy.
So there are a limited number of things for him to do.
Right, but on this team, the number three guy is the outside receiver, because Moss on one outside position, and Welker in the slot is the number two.
Yeah.
So the number three guy on this team is an outside receiver,
which to me says it's going to put more of a.
It'd be easier for him, to come in and learn the offense, because you could just say to him, okay, run a fly pattern, run a post pattern, run a 20-yard out. You know, I mean, those kind of things might be easier for him to slowly integrate himself into the offense, as opposed to a slot guy who might have more going on in the middle of the field. More reads to have to make. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's
potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially.
That's interesting. Hey, Big Al is on the line in Georgia. Big Al, what's up? Welcome to the playbook.
Hey, how you doing there, boys?
Great. What's happening?
Up, Big Al?
Hey. Well, we're just looking forward to the next five games. It isn't like it hadn't been said before, but the next five games are, you know, going to be very important. And I think if we get the three division games, I think those are the most crucial games.
Yeah.
And if we can somehow split with the two road games, Indianapolis, New Orleans, 4-1 would look pretty good.
Well, 4-1 would be outstanding.
4-1 would be outstanding.
4-1 would be outstanding. And I said this last week and even the week before when we were getting ready to head into this, Al. The Patriots, over the next five games, and again, the fifth game obviously being the at-Miami game toward the 1st of December that they're going to have to play here. I said they have to find a way to go 3-2 in these five. And so it would stand to reason that the three that you'd really want them to win are the two Miami games and the Jet game.
Well,
absolutely.
I would disagree.
Why?
I would disagree. I'd rather take a hit in one of the division games and beat the Colts, because if it comes down to a tie, I'd rather the Colts come here in January than New England have to go to Indianapolis.
Well, now you're really kind of opening up a can of worms. Yeah, I think you got to win the division.
You know what? I think the division will be wrapped
record,
up.
Division record, though, is one of the top tiebreakers, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, head to head is first. So if it comes down to a tie, I want to be head to head with
divisional record is second.
Common opponents, I believe, is second.
Oh, okay.
Are you sure?
I think they've changed that the last couple of years. It used to be head-to-head, and then division record, and then conference record.
Yeah,
but I think common opponents has
is that down to
ground.
Four?
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. I thought it was division, then conference, then common opponents. That was the pecking order I thought
it might
went.
Be right. I have the thing hanging up in my cube, and I just never look at it. I have the whole tiebreaker format hanging
I know,
there.
That's what I thought.
Eric, in principle, I would agree with you. When I said 4-1, if you would somehow gave me a magic wand and said, pick which one of those two, then I would rather lose the New Orleans game than lose the Indianapolis game.
No question. I'd agree with that one 110%.
Yeah. I'm not worried about winning the division. I think they'll win the division. Even with two division losses, I think they'll win the division.
But unless you're going to get to 12 wins somehow, I don't think you're thinking about a bye here. So I think you just need to worry about the division.
Well, I think if they go 3-2 in this stretch and they beat the Colts,
then you're going to have to win out in order to have a shot at a bye.
I think if you get to 4-1, that puts you in a great position to get a bye.
I agree with that, Al. I absolutely agree with that. I don't think 11-5 is going to get you a bye here, fellas. It's just not going to.
No.
12-4.
It has in the past.
We've gotten
first round buys in 2001 at 11-5. But then last year we were 11-5, didn't even make the playoffs. Right.
That's why I don't want to take a chance on that. 12-4, I think you'd pretty much have it.
I think the Colts will get one of those two buys. Okay.
Well, the way that they're going now, I think Denver's going to come back to the pack.
I think exactly right.
I agree.
I think Baltimore exposed the Broncos for what they really are, and I think they'll come back to the pack. I think I could easily see them going 11-5.
Sure. Which is why I want to get to 12. I want wins. We need wins.
Those last four games that we have coming up, I think, look pretty winnable. You know, the one game that concerns me, and it always supports my belief that I've always had that it isn't just who you play, it's when you play them.
And where.
And we got Houston the last game of the year down there. Mm-hmm. They might need that game.
That's exactly right.
To get into the postseason.
That's exactly right. And
you know, if we're playing them in one of these deals where they need the game to get in the postseason, and we just sort of need the game to improve our status in the playoff pecking order.
I don't like our chances at all.
I'll tell you.
No, I don't think so. No, if we have a bye,
I like their chances.
I don't. I will disagree with you 110% because these guys just want to win the division. I don't think these guys are going to play for the bye. I don't think they ever have. I don't think they ever will. If they're sitting there with 11 wins, they're 11-4 going into that last week, and they've already got the division clinched, forget about it.
I tell you what, John.
It's over.
If by some chance they are fighting for with Indianapolis for a tiebreaker.
Indy's going to be long gone, Eric. Indy's going to be two games ahead.
I'd like to think that, John, but they almost lost to the 49ers this past weekend.
Okay, but Indy is still what, 6-7-0? What are they now?
7-0 right now.
Okay, I'm just telling you. I'm telling you that Indy's going to be probably 13-2 or 13-3 or 14-2. That's what they're going to end up. Whether they're really that good or not, I don't know. But they're going to end up that way anyway. And because of that, they're going to be two or three games ahead of the Patriots. So if the Pats already have the division clinch going down to Houston, and Houston needs it to, say, go 10-6 and squeeze in as a wild card, and the Patriots only need it maybe.
All right, well, what if they're fighting Denver? What if they're fighting Denver at, 12-4 versus 11-5?
Well, if Denver, if they need, let's put it this way, if Denver's 12-4 and the Patriots need it to tie Denver, they lose the tiebreaker, so it's a moot point. They lose that.
No, but I'm saying, what if they could be 12-4 and Denver was going to be 11-5, then they'd be fighting to get the 12-4.
That would be the only thing I could see giving us a chance in that game, because that would give them a chance of being a 2 mm-hmm. and having a bye. As opposed to playing at home but having to play the first week. I could see
scenario. As an old school Pats fan, there's only one playoff scenario that would bother me, and that would be if we had to go to Denver and play.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? In the past, I would agree with you,
but
Al,
you know what?
I
would almost relish Al going back to playing Denver again.
Because I think
they
won that game in Denver.
Yes, they did.
They should have won that game.
They screwed up.
They sure as hell didn't win the second half. I'm sure they might have won the first half.
No, but they screwed up.
But you know what? I don't feel that fear of Denver like I used to.
I don't either.
I think Kyle Wharton is probably the most underappreciated quarterback in football. He's always been a lot better than what he's ever been given credit for. And Josh McDaniels, God bless him, I think he knows what he's doing.
Sure.
I think that's a formidable combination. It just doesn't seem to matter who we're up against out there. I don't know if it's mental with the altitude or what it's all about, but we just struggle out there all the time. And if there's any way, I almost would rather play at the Hoosier Dome. I guess not the Hoosier Dome anymore. Yeah. What is it now?
Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah, Lucas whatever. Oil, whatever yeah. the hell it is. Right. I would rather play in Indianapolis again than play at Denver.
Well, I disagree with you.
I would respectfully disagree too. I'd much rather play to Denver. Definitely want to go to Denver.
Having been to Lucas Oil, it'll be fun seeing it.
I think 4-1 would be great. I mean, 3-2 is the minimum, but if we can get to 4-1, and these non-conference games on the road are almost the closest thing
to exhibition games during
the regular season that you have.
I mean,
I don't care if we get blown out in New Orleans. If we go to New Orleans and lose 48-2, I could care less.
That won't happen.
I know it won't happen, but it's just road games, non-conference, you always want to win at home. But road games, non-conference, almost don't really count.
Well, keep in mind now, the Patriots have had really good success against NFC teams over the last several years.
True enough. And we needed them all last year because the NFC West was horrible and the AFC West was horrible. But this year it's a little bit tougher schedule this year. But if we can get through these next five games in good shape like we're talking, I think it sets up really good down the stretch.
I hope you're right.
Have a great day, fellas.
All right, thanks, Al. Appreciate that. Alan, Georgia.
I'd be amazed if they go 4-1.
I would too, frankly. I'm a little worried about finishing 3-2.
Yeah. I think
4-1 would be.
I think they'll lose one of the division games, and I think they'll win one of those two road games against the Saints or
again,
the Colts.
Again, I totally agree with you, which is why that's two wins. Where's the third one coming from? You know, in this five game stretch, I just think this is going to be very, very difficult, regardless of who the opponent is. It's just going to be hard to do. You know, 2-3 is something that could be very real, and if it's 2-3, mm-hmm. then you're looking at 11-5 at best. And again, boy, that game against Houston, shoot, it might mean a little bit more than just, you know, the Texans getting in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could have divisional implications for the Patriots.
I'm not so worried about that. I really am not. I don't see Miami or the
Jets
coming
back. Well, let's
put it this way.
The Jets would have to go 6-2 in the second half. And that's just to go 10-6.
Yeah, I don't see it happening.
So unless they go 6-2.
And I don't see the Dolphins with Chad Henne coming back. And
the Dolphins would have to go also 6-2 just to get to 10-6. And that is provided they beat the Patriots this week.
They'd have
to go 6-2. So it seems to me 11-5 is probably going to get the Patriots the division title without too much trouble.
Right.
Unlike last year.
Unlike last year.
But at the same time, though, now you're talking about playoff seedings coming into play, and I think you're going to have 12-4 to look at a bye.
And let's not forget about Pittsburgh or Cincinnati.
Well, that's very true.
Because those two are 5-2 at this point.
Very true. And my guess is that, you know, the wild card could very easily come out of that division.
Yeah, I would think so.
You'd have to say so.
I don't think it's going to come out of the West.
Nope.
I don't think it's.
It could come out of the. It could come out of the South. Again, it depends on Houston.
Depending on what Houston does.
Sure.
But I think the North is the more competitive division with Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. One of those teams is
going
to make the playoffs.
Either the Jets or the Dolphins has to go 10-6 to even have a prayer.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I think the North is going to be the wild card division.
I think you could be right. Here's an email. Let's get a couple emails in here before you actually.
It might even be both of them. They might have both wild cards.
You think? With
Baltimore or Pittsburgh or
Baltimore, Pittsburgh,
yeah, one of those,
and Cincinnati.
One of those three
all
will
three?
Win the division. The other two could
I can
be
see that. I can see that all three teams come, or two, both wild cards coming out of that division.
Possibly.
Yeah.
If Houston continues to play decently, it would be Houston and one of the
other. Well, Houston and Baltimore are both 4-3, right?
Yeah.
Both 4-3. Yeah. So, Houston could one, and then Baltimore and Cincy could come out of the other. Yeah. Wow. That'd be tough.
Yeah.
That'd be tough. Wow. Yeah, you're right. It's even more of an uphill battle for somebody out of the East, I think, to be the wild card this year. All right, before you go off and do your real job, this one comes from Robin in Alaska, who says, thumbs up, Brandon Tate.
Robin's a guy, by the way.
Yes, I know that. Tate is a rookie. He missed training camp, missed 6 weeks of the season, yet he looked all right against Tampa Bay. Of course, it was Tampa Bay, but still it was nice to see, especially since the Pats are so thin at wide receiver. Tate's separation against the Tampa Bay corners has made me excited about his potential as a downfield threat. And then he says, thumbs down, Logan Mankins. Reason.
Yeah.
Now, I am in no way a scout.
The penalties?
I'm just an armchair GM full of uneducated opinions, but it seems like Mankins has drawn a fair share of penalties the last few weeks. Mankins, whose intensity and physicality I otherwise love, needs to nip the penalties in the bud, especially against the teams we are about to face this month.
Well,
Robin is very astute.
Yeah, one of the tasks I have on game day is to chart the penalties, accepted and non-accepted. Every flag that's thrown against the Patriots, I have to chart whether or not it's accepted. And I have to keep track of it not only as a total team number, but as individuals. And I believe, I'm going off the top of my head, John, because I don't have my PFW copy in front of me.
Okay.
I think Mankins has 4 penalties this season. And I 3 of them, excuse me, 5. He has 5, and 4 of them came in that Tampa game.
Yes. Yes.
So he had one horrendous game as far as penalties go. And I think other than that, he had 1 penalty this year.
Well, you know, offensive linemen only get called out for when they do bad things anyway.
Right, but I'm saying Robin's argument was that penalties in general have been plaguing him all season.
That's it, just 5?
I think it's just 5. I'm going to go back upstairs and check, and I'll either apologize or confirm that tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
But I believe that's what the number is for him. I think he has 5 total, and 4 of them came in that one game.
Right. Interesting. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania says, comparing 8 defensive stats.
Bill, stick to what you know.
8.
He says, how much did the Pats miss out on by not signing Julius Peppers or Jason Taylor after eight games, notably in the sack department, is what he says.
Well,
how much did they miss out?
I mean, obviously, if they had a guy of Taylor's or Peppers' talent in the lineup, I think they'd have a little bit more of a pass rush. Jason Taylor has 5.5 sacks at this point for that Dolphins defense. Peppers, I think, has sort of mailed it in with Carolina. It doesn't seem like he's really trying, according to things I'm reading out of that
that's
region.
Kinda what I, although,
but if he were on this team, I think
I was impressed with Carolina this last
in.
Weekend. I mean,
yeah,
kind of shoved the ball down their throats.
I think that ship has sailed. They're not really going to compete for a playoff spot. I don't think.
No.
And I don't think Peppers wants to be there. If he were here and on a team he really wanted to, you know, I think you'd see production. Obviously, I'd rather have one or two of those, you know, either one of those guys in the lineup. But, you know, you can't go back and change that. So you have to make do with what we have.
One more from Mike here. It seems as though when the injury report comes out, the Patriots have many more players on it, as do the opponent. Do the Patriots really have that many more injured players, or is it a way of reverse cover-up? List every injury and just confuse everyone about as to who is really hurt and might be available to play. It sounds as this might be one of Bill's ways of manipulating the system once again.
Are you kidding me?
I think it's just a matter of cover CYA. You know what that acronym is. So if anybody has
cover your arse.
Exactly. If anybody has anything wrong, list them. Look, they've been doing this thing with Tom Brady in the shoulder for his
forever.
Whole career.
Forever.
Yeah, I mean,
haven't you guys started an injury report too now? Paul Perillo, paper cut.
Oh, yeah, he's always questionable.
Andy?
Yeah, always doubtful.
Swollen
always doubtful.
Head.
Swollen
yeah,
head.
Yeah, swollen head. Yep. Doubtful. But he always ends up playing, so.
What's yours? Receding hairline?
Yeah, I've had that since I was in my 20s.
As someone in that boat, I take offense.
Just kidding.
Of course.
I don't offend easily on either of these.
Have a little fun at your expense here. Oh, because I'm older than either one of you, and I have a hairline.
You have a full head of hair.
Thank you very much.
Full head of salt and pepper hair.
Yeah, thank you.
Matches your PC basketball shirt.
You're actually being kind with the salt and pepper reference. You could say, man, you're old. Look at that gray hair. Holy crap.
Well, I got to get back upstairs and
yes,
do
you
some
do.
Writing.
Thanks, Munch.
But I'll come back and
we'll
visit
love talk
you.
To you tomorrow.
Masculine guys. Brady is too girly for me.
Thank you.
I would destroy him in every
By the way, John, quick tangent. My favorite TV reporter right now is on Fox, Shannon Bream. Gorgeous, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
And she's a lawyer.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So
smart and beautiful.
So she's gorgeous and she's smart.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd say there'd be some real stock
that's a good
in
combination
that. Yeah, there'd be some real stock.
All right,
in
I'm gonna
or Sam in Chicago.
Who is a female, apparently, by the way. You got to play this thing for John after.
What is it?
After the break, he'll play it for you.
Okay, all right.
I'll check on the Logan Mankins penalty thing.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Talk to you tomorrow. All right. Eric Scalavina from PFW. We'll take a break here. Going to come back and continue with more emails. Webradio@patriots.com. And again, our email question today, give us a thumbs up on one player, a thumbs down on another Patriots player as to whom you've liked, whom you've disliked, and why. Throughout the course of this season, 508-543-7482 is also the telephone number if you want to call in. And also coming up in hour two, we're going to listen to the conference calls from Dean Pease, Patriots defensive coordinator. And also we're going to listen to Mike Caserio as well.
Nick
Excuse
Caserio.
Me, what did I say? Mike? Nick Caserio. I knew that as soon as I let it out of my mouth. Nick Caserio, Patriots player personnel, of course, and the de facto general manager, if you will, for this football team, and get some of his thoughts, because we really haven't had a chance to hear from him much at all this year here inside the playbook. So we're going to have that coming up for you, hour number two inside the playbook.
So hot. Want to touch the hiney.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
It's
you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Welcome back, hour number two, Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on American Airlines, Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Thanks to Eric Scalavino from PFW for being here in the opening hour. He'll rejoin us in our opening hour on tomorrow's program as well.
So do you want to hear that MP3 he was talking about?
Yes. What's the MP3 he was talking about?
Sam in Chicago bought us lunch today. And
I missed out. Oh, no, Eric did save me a cookie.
And we had always thought that Sam in Chicago was...
A female?
A male.
Oh,
But then this MP3 was attached to it.
Okay.
Hi, guys. Hope you're enjoying your lunch today. Thanks for a great show. I'm a new listener, but a longtime Pats fan who grew up in Arlington. PFW is the best Patriot talk show that I can listen to while relaxing in my Wes Welker jersey. Thanks again for the show, and Eric, don't let the guys get to you. I happen to love college kickers who wear V-neck sweaters and have the soft hands of an artist. Love you guys. Go Pats!
So now there's some questioning. And clearly because she likes artists with soft hands, Eric's smitten.
Eric is definitely smitten with Sam. I'm smitten with Sam, and she didn't even buy lunch for me. That's pretty good. I like that. I did get a cookie, though, Sam. Wow, that's impressive. I also like the ability to mix music in the background of her MP3 there. That's pretty good. I'm very impressed with her production skills.
She's got some skills, huh?
Definitely, skills. Next, of course, we need to see the photo.
They asked for that last show. Send in a photo.
Photo. Got to see the photo, Sam. Then we could... Yeah, really. Then we'll see how. Believe me. We'll all will be learned after that point in time. That's pretty good. I'm very impressed. Very impressed by that. MP3s, by the way, are welcome on the program. You know, anytime you want to send them along, if you want to, you know, take to the extent that Sam did. Awesome. You don't necessarily have to, you know, mix it with music in the background like she did, but if you want to send us a voice MP3, that'd be great.
I'll Mikey Vandalism, who sends them in from time to time.
Yeah, I've heard those before. Yeah, that'd be good. So, yeah, there you go. That's just another way that you can communicate with us here on the show. You can send the email. If you want to take the time to do the voicemail thing with the MP3, that'd be fine. Or if you want to pick up the phone and do it radio talk show style, 508-543-7482. Cool. Operators are standing by now, ready to take your call. Be one of the first 10 callers, and you'll receive 50% discount.
And the chance to talk to John Rook.
You can tell it's kind of a slow day, can't you? All right, let's get a couple of emails in here, and then let's get to Nick Caserio. Mike sends this. He says, in the upcoming games against the Colts and Saints, would you rather play either of these two teams being undefeated or either of these two teams coming off their first loss? Good question. Good question. I think I'd rather. I'm not sure, so sure it makes a difference one way or the other to the opposition. So with that being said, I think I'd rather play them undefeated. Just because it'll have a bigger impact around the league if the Patriots knock them off. Certainly, I think from a Patriots fan's point of view, you'd want those teams to be unbeaten. So when you knock them off, it's going to elevate the Patriots' status, as I said, around the league. Now, looking at it the other way, if those teams are with a loss, maybe they're already deflated, maybe they're trying to build themselves back up. If you're the Colts, you're kind of like the Patriots. You don't lose a whole lot back-to-back. So I'm thinking you probably want to play them undefeated. How's that? I just happen to think you probably want to play them undefeated. Okay. Enough of that. All right, we'll continue with your thoughts on the emails here. But I wanted to take a couple of moments here to let you listen into the conversation Patriots Director of Player Personnel Nick Caserio had with members of the media yesterday. Nick, of course, along with Floyd Reese, splitting the quote-unquote de facto general manager duties for the Patriots after Scott Pioli left for Kansas City during the offseason. And Nick does meet with members of the media once a week, and along with defensive coordinator Dean Pease. And this is something that actually is relatively new within the last couple of years within the Patriots organization, to provide a little insight into observation as to not only the Patriots players, but opposing players that they're getting ready to face. And we haven't had an opportunity yet to really have any of Nick's conversation here with us inside the playbook. So we're going to play just a little bit, coming off the bye week, doing some reevaluating of what the Patriots have done through the first 7 weeks of the season and getting ready to play Miami this week at home. We're going to let you listen into a bit of here. Nick Caserio, Patriots Director of Player Personnel.
Nick, I was going to ask this of Coach Belichick. There's been a lot of discussion in the news this week about concussions and them leading to issues of dementia later in life and memory loss, etc. Have you guys paid a lot of attention to it, and has it changed anything, your approach organizationally to how you deal with injuries or stuff like that?
I'd say it's something that we're probably that we're cognizant of. I think in the end, the people that are most qualified, you know, when we rely on them are our medical staff and our doctors. So whatever input that they have, and they're probably a little bit closer to the situation than, say, myself or Bill. So what we do, you know, we take the information that they have, and then we'll figure out what type of application we'll have as far as practice or players, but really in the end they're more qualified to speak on that, but that's why we have them here, so to consult with them on matters. And it's a serious issue. I mean, I think it's something that the league is certainly conscious of, and in the end player safety is the most important thing. So whatever you need to do from a player safety standpoint to make sure that, you know, players stay healthy, I think that's what you're ultimately trying to do.
Nick, what was the follow-up on Brandon Tate's debut in that game? And sort of from a coaching perspective, was there anything you felt like he could have done on that interception to maybe not have it be an interception?
I think, you know, it was good for Brandon to get some experience, you know, whether it was on special teams, returning kickoffs. He had a few plays there offensively, you know, made a nice play in the reverse. I mean, I think there was some good plays, some bad plays, just like everybody else. And in fact, on the interception, he ran the wrong route, quite frankly, and he knows that, and we talked about that. But he went ahead and tried to make a play, so I think he tried to do what he could on the play. But I think, you know, last week was good for him and some of our other younger players to go through practice and put them in some situations maybe that they haven't been put in as of yet, whether it's 2-minute, red area. So I think it's good to have him out there. He's progressing along, so we'll see how it goes this week.
Nick, with a guy like Brandon, do you guys try and maybe limit it a little bit to him learning just one of the receiver positions, or do you try and feed him all the positions? Because I know you like to have that flexibility with the receivers offensively.
Sure. You know, I think, you know, a guy like Brandon, he's been in the meetings all year, so, you know, we might tell him, look, on this particular play, this is where you're going to work. But it's hard for any young player, whether it's him or Julian, to give them a large volume right away. You try to start them at one particular point and let them sort of build on that and get comfortable with one thing. But in the end, you'd like to have as much flexibility as possible so that you can move multiple players around, you can use multiple formations, so you don't want to necessarily pigeonhole yourself. So I think he's moving in the right direction. I think he's a smart guy. I think he works hard. So I think the more he's out in the field and gets those real reps, I mean, there's one thing to look at it on a sheet of paper in a classroom, and then to go out there and do it on the practice field when you hear the quarterback call the play, okay, what am I in this particular play? So, you know, we'll see how it goes, but I think he's moving in the right direction.
Hey, Nick, with what Miami is bringing this week and obviously over the last year or so, you know, and they're drafting a Pat White, when you guys are scouting college players, does the emergence of that kind of stuff kind of affect the grade of some players? And, you know, maybe looking back and seeing guys like, I don't know, Charlie Ward or Tommy Frazier in the past, might they have been graded differently based on some of the stuff that's in the NFL now?
I'll just speak to Pat. I mean, just knowing him a little bit more intimately than let's say, Tommy or Charlie. But
right.
I think there's some teams, obviously Miami, this is one of the things they do offensively is this Wildcat package. So he played in a system that's somewhat similar. But I think if you look at some of the college offenses, really they have a spread component to them where there's a run-pass option for the quarterback. So, like, with Pat, from his perspective, at least as it related to us, I think we evaluated him as a quarterback, and I think the things that he did as a quarterback, his mechanics, his arm strength, we knew he was athletic, he knew he could run the ball. So I think it's all going to be relative to what you do offensively. So, you know, I think if more and more teams try to employ something like this, then, you know, you might – factor that into your grade, but I think you're just grading the player for what he is. And for example, you know, with Pat, you evaluate him whether it's whatever position you're going to evaluate him as, whether it's quarterback, whether it's a receiver, whether it's a running back. In our particular case, we evaluated him as a quarterback, and then we assign the grade accordingly.
Nick, going back to Brandon Tate, on that route, was it something that he should have adjusted to based on what he saw from the defense, or was it just a brain freeze where he just ran the wrong route out of the huddle?
Yeah, I think he just ran the wrong route out of the huddle. I mean, it was an honest mistake. He knew he'd made the mistake on the play, and, you know, we corrected it and we move on. So, you know, as far as what happened down the field, he was trying to make the play and it just happened to work out, and we just move on to the next one.
Nick, when you bring in guys to work them out at this time of year, obviously everyone's situation is a little bit different. But how much of that is to kind of put together a list in your own mind, you know, guys, just in case someone gets hurt? How much of it's for practice reputation? How much of it is just for, you know, to keep an eye on other guys?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, you know, because you have some players, especially you get to this time of the year, you're in November, so you have some players, some veterans, who may have been on rosters in 2008 and may have been productive, and then they haven't been in a camp. Maybe they ended 2008 in injured reserve or whatever the case might be. So there might be some good football players who've been productive that are still out there. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is, you know, you start to look at players that might be able to go on your practice squad. If there's a player that you'd like coming out of college or that you'd like during the preseason and you see some positive attributes on that particular player, then you want to bring them in, work them out, spend some time with them, have the medical information, and then make a decision on your practice squad, or maybe it's even something for next year as you start to look into some of the reserve future type things. So I'd say it's twofold. So it's obviously it's commonplace throughout the league. You know, some are a little bit more on an emergency type basis. For example, if you have an injury in the course of the game, then you have to act swiftly. And then also it's just maintaining that list of players who could be candidates to either sign to your roster at some point or to put on the practice squad for a myriad of reasons.
Guys, let's take one more question.
Nick, just to go back to Brandon Tate for a second, when you guys were evaluating him, I know that the word that keeps coming up and his coaches, Butch Davis, mentioned it, you know, electrifying. How close did you guys grade him to, say, someone like Percy Harvin, and did you see them as similar type players?
I think both players, they were good with the ball in their hands. You know, both had good quickness. Both had good playing speed. You know, they had different roles. You know, the way that Florida had used Harvin, you know, he was almost more of a de facto running back because he was very involved in the running game. And they played him in the slot. You know, I think Brandon played a little bit more in the perimeter from a receiving standpoint, and he also played in the slot. So I would say they were similar from the standpoint. They were both good with the ball in their hands, but they were playing in different offenses, and their club, you know, their schools employ them a little bit differently. So there were some things that were similar, and there were other things that were a little bit different.
Okay, Nick. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right, so there you go. Nick Caserio, the Patriots director of player personnel, on the line with Patriots media yesterday here at the stadium. By the way, I don't know, this has sort of slipped under the radar, but I'm sure some of you probably are aware of this. Caserio was a teammate of Josh McDaniels at John Carroll University. He was a quarterback back in the mid to late 1990s there. And then he was a teammate of Josh McDaniels before he got involved in some grad assistant work in 99 and then came this way in 2000 and was a part of the actual offensive assistant team staff in 2001, the very first Super Bowl season here in New England. So Caserio has a very similar background that Josh McDaniels does, and he's kind of taken his way in terms of the development and player personnel while McDaniels has done his on-the-field coaching. And if he turns out anything like Josh has turned out in terms of a coach, the Patriots probably have themselves a keeper for some time to come. So we wanted to make sure that we at least gave you a little bit of that, because quite frankly, you know, a lot of the times when he does his news conferences, you can find those news conferences here on the website and in other places. But a lot of you are like me. You don't have time to search, and the one thing you do have time to do is listen to one thing or do one thing at any one given time while you're doing all your other stuff on the Internet. And so you kind of stream this and listen to it while you're working or doing whatever. And that's why we bring you some of these interviews from time to time, because, frankly, you learn more, and you learn more about who these people are and what they actually mean to this organization and how somehow, and this is one of the great things I think about having been here myself for 17 years, is that you see people come and go, but you learn that the one thing that this particular ownership group and this particular coaching staff has done since they've been here is that they have an inordinate ability, an uncanny knack for finding talented people. And they allow these talented people, maybe they're unknowns to you, unknowns to me, but they allow these people to do their jobs. There's not a whole lot of hovering. There's not a whole lot of micromanaging. There's nothing more that I despise than a micromanager in terms of someone being a supervisor at work. I mean, you hire someone to do a job, then by God, let them do the job. Otherwise, do it yourself and save the money and the aggravation. Well, the Patriots don't subscribe to that. They generally let you do the job. In fact, they expect you to do the job. And when they find these people, yeah, sure, they're finding younger people who probably will come in a little bit, shall we say, pennies on the dollar type of salary. And then when they get an opportunity to move on and maybe run their own ship, kind of like what a guy like Scott Pioli has done, you pat them on the back, thank them for a job well done, and you let them go. You'd like for them to stay. You try to negotiate it if you can. But this team has always had a business model in place. And they have guidelines as to what certain positions are worth, and they've been very successful in following those guidelines. So it'd be pretty hard to argue any other way. Why rock the boat? And so a guy like McDaniels goes off, you know, pat him on the rump, and you say, hey, okay, great job, kid, thank you. And you go out and you find the next one. But Nick Caserio was one of those guys cut of that same mold that, you know, has been moved up the ladder now that Scott Pioli has gone on. Who's to say that if Scott Pioli had stuck around, Nick Caserio would still be here? We don't really know the answer to that question. But he's getting his opportunity now in charge of all player personnel. He was previously in charge of pro personnel. But now he's going to include the college guys in his mix as well and oversee that. And That's a big responsibility for a relatively young guy who's only been out of college for, what, 11, 12 years. And Patriots are have put a lot of faith in a guy like Nick, and so far he's doing okay. I mean, let's use Brandon McGowan as a tremendous example. Here's somebody that was identified relatively early as being a potential, you know, keeper for the Patriots. Although you'd have to say that maybe he was a little bit I don't know, I want to say under the radar, but let's just say he did not distinguish himself during his time in Chicago. Comes here and then bang, he's turning into a guy that you just can't do without in the secondary right now. So it's finding those types of players that Caserio, amongst others, are in charge of with the Patriots. So we'll bring you some of what he thinks from time to time as well. All right, back to some of the emails. Our question of the day, our thought of the day, has to do with thumbs up and thumbs down for Patriots players on the roster here at the veritable midway point of the 2009 NFL season. And give thumbs up to one player. Give thumbs down to another. In your own estimation, based on what you've seen, not so much what you might have read, but what you've seen, what have your own two eyes told you? Now, I'm not looking for expert commentary. I don't think we have to have that. You can certainly provide it if you think you can offer it. But what I want is your honest opinion on who has stood out to you and why, and who has disappointed you and why. Because to me, the truth usually always lies somewhere in the middle. And I do believe that fans' perception and, shall we say, non-football people, their perception is usually relatively keen. If you're into the team as much as I suspect that you are, if you're listening to this program or a program like this, then you follow the team enough to be able to make an educated guess. And if you're going to come up with something that I have not considered or any of the other guys haven't considered, you know what? Next game out, I'm going to take a closer look at it. I'm going to see if I see the same things that you see that allow us to continue to converse and, go back and forth with particular thoughts and opinions about the subject here as we, continue on throughout the season here inside the playbook. So I think it's all good here. John in Dallas writes, he gives a thumbs up to McGowan. But a close second is Watson and Merriweather. And then he says, thumbs down to Dalis Thomas. Where is he? I don't know that I can answer that question, John. I think everybody's kind of wondering the same thing about a Dalis. Wasn't on the practice field today, as the team is on practicing on a Tuesday, as we mentioned in the opening hour of the program here today. Just because it's a little bit of a different week coming off of the bye week. They're getting an extra day of on-field practice in. Normally Tuesday is the off day, but they made Monday really the off day for most everybody so they could turn it into a four-day weekend and basically take off Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then it's back to work today. And then, of course, they'll turn probably more toward game planning preparation for Miami tomorrow, as they normally do on a regular work week. So it's a little bit of a different twist of the work week. Adelis was not at practice today, at least in the media portion that we're allowed to watch. I cannot answer the question as to whether or not he's injured or whether he had permission to miss or whether or not he's, AWOL. Who knows? It's unfortunate. He has been catching some heat. I'd have to say that he's I figured he would be a prime candidate for a thumbs down from many of you. I'm wondering if we just didn't expect too much out of the guy. Do we expect too much out of the guy? Again, put aside for a moment here. Put aside the salary, okay? Yeah, I know. He makes a lot of money, and I think with that comes a lot of expectation. I don't disagree with that. But let's set the money equation aside. We thought that a guy like Dalis Thomas was going to come here and just wreak utter havoc, I think, on opposing quarterbacks based on what he did in Baltimore. That's a fair assessment, I think. I think what we've realized is that his teammates in Baltimore, and I think on one side, you know, certainly in the middle he had Ray Lewis, and the other side I guess he had Bart Scott primarily. You know, that linebacking core in Baltimore is one of the better linebacking cores I think we probably had in recent years in the entire NFL. But I think we realized that that was a unique unit, that each was only as good as the other was going to allow him to be. In other words, they played off of each other well. Here in New England, it's a little different because he's been on the outside in largely a 3-4 defensive look. I think he's been uncomfortable when he's had to, you know, line up on the defensive line from time to time. I'm just not certain that the Patriots have had the complementary personnel to suit his talents like he had with him in Baltimore. I'm not saying that to denigrate anybody like Teddy Bruschi or anybody else. Different players. See, I think Adalis was the kind of guy that could thrive in certain situations because he had guys like Lewis and Scott to take the lead, and then, you know, he could sort of like clean up after them. Whereas here we've expected a guy like Thomas to take the lead, and I don't think that's necessarily been his style of play. I think Thomas has been more of a cleanup kind of guy, which to me tells me why he might actually be more suited as an inside linebacker. Now, you'll recall when he first got here, he played almost extensively, almost exclusively inside in a 3-4. We thought it was ostensibly to learn the Patriots' defensive scheme and the fact that they sort of taught inside out defensively. And they thought that, you know, maybe a guy like Thomas would be a guy that would end up calling the signals, and they want him to, you know, learn how to play the inside spot here. But I think now I'm prepared to say that they did that because they thought he was more of an inside backer to begin with. Maybe he is. So maybe our expectations of Adalis need to be refocused a little bit. Every time that Bill Belichick has been asked about Adalis Thomas, he hasn't hesitated at all. Adalis is a very good player, and I'm paraphrasing here. He has not said that he's displeased with Adalis Thomas. What we've seen and what we've gone on about, such as what John in Dallas wrote here, Adalis Thomas, where is he? These are our observations based on our expectations that are not being met. Maybe our expectations need to change where Adalis Thomas is concerned. So, whereas, you know, I think many of us are ready to, you know, throw the mail in on a guy like Lawrence Maroney. Seen enough. Ready to make my call on that one. I think we probably still have to leave the jury. I think we have to still leave the jury in session on Adalis Thomas. Let's finish this year. Let's see where this year goes and what kind of an impact he can be or can have and where he ends up fitting in. I'm willing to give Adalis Thomas the rest of this year before I'm ready to say bust. But maybe that's just me. You might feel differently. And if you do, your opinion is certainly welcome and encouraged. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. Tracy in Las Vegas. Just a thought about total disclosure. When you put out too much information, you run the risk of people shutting off from it. Case in point, Brett Favre. It seems like before and after every game, there's news that he's been injured again. At first, I thought he was falling apart. But now I think they're just looking for an excuse in case he totally blows a game. Sure, I think that's an interesting point. We were talking a little earlier about the Patriots and their style of reporting injuries for the injury report every week and how they just kind of anything that's wrong with anybody, they just kind of list them. And what they've really done is, you know, they've just listed guys who participate in practice. That's all they've really done. And if he hasn't participated in practice, they've given you the reason why, based on a particular ailment, although they've been relatively generic with it, arm, leg, hand, foot, back, neck, whatever it might end up being. Ankle, that's been prevalent. So without specifics, they've been generic about it. And my whole point was, well, you know, you can also use a disclosure like that to your advantage. And I think to what Tracy's saying here is that, you know, that might be kind of why the Vikings are doing what they're doing with a guy like Brett Favre, just in case they're trying to set him up. And I don't disagree with that. I think that, you know, you have to play the PR game here. You do have to not only manage your own fan base, but you also have to manage perception around the league. And again, Eric's point was, well, since when does a guy like Bill Belichick give a rat's you know what the fans think or what the perception of the Patriots is around the league? And I said, well, that's true. That's true. We don't. I mean, there are a lot of people that don't really care within the organization what others think about this team. Yet, It's a good way to manage control of the information and the public relation and the thought process here. If people are feeling better about your team, you have an easier time of managing potential problem situations. If people are already feeling good about it, that's PR 101, kids. That's all it is. If you're managing the situation, crisis management here. Why do you think politicians turn to, you know, when things are going rotten? Why do you think they turn to PR firms to put spin control on certain things? It's because they need to turn it into their advantage. Well, the Patriots have always been a master of spin control themselves. And I'm saying you could ultimately close the market on managing PR here if you were a little more forthcoming. Because the negative to this is that, well, nobody knew what Jarvis Green's injury was. Nobody knew that he was even hurt. And the common perception of Jarvis Green was, before we figured out he was hurt earlier today, well, you know what? He's not really having a very good year. That was a missed opportunity for a manageable situation. Well, Jarvis is, you know, banged around a little bit. Not once did we ever hear Jarvis was banged up. We just assumed Jarvis was fine. At the very least, they could have listed him as being banged up or could have said, oh, Jarvis is a little nicked, but then so are, you know, the other 52 guys on the team. Okay, that's fine. So then at least we would have had the preconceived notion that, you know, well, Jarvis is hurt. And this wouldn't have come as such a surprise to so many people. I'm just saying this was a missed management opportunity. That's all. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We're going to sneak in a timeout. We're going to finish up emails here with our question of the day. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Patriots players. And we'll also let you listen into Patriots defensive coordinator Dean Pease inside the playbook.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio, back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Rolling along inside the playbook for a Tuesday here. John Rook with you in the second hour of our program. Web radio at patriots.com. Our friend Mikey Vandalism has answered the call. We call him out, and yes, indeed, he sends us an MP3 with his thoughts on thumbs up and thumbs down. All right, Doc, roll it.
What's up, John? This is Mikey Vandalism coming to you with a premium MP3. So your question about the thumbs up, thumbs down, my thumbs up would probably have to go to Brandon Merriweather. I really think Merriweather has come into his own. He's been giving the defense an actual presence that they didn't have before with all the departures from all the veterans. He really is stepping up and making some huge plays, living up to his expectations. So I would say my thumbs up would probably go to Merriweather right now. He's playing an absolutely unbelievable form, and I'd like to see more of that. My thumbs down, oh, this is a tough one. There's a lot of thumbs down that I think people could deserve, but I would say Adalius Thomas. I really think that he really needs to figure out how to get – I mean, when you have players like Mike Wright outperforming you and Tully Bantakan outperforming you, I mean, they're paying you all that money. You need to produce. And he hasn't really done all that much. I mean, there's a couple other players on the defense and even maybe the offense that aren't really – producing as much, but I would say he's a big factor. He's supposed to be. We got rid of Richard Seymour. We got rid of a lot of people on defense, and he's just not coming out and with the blazing guns that he needs to be and getting to the quarterback. All right, thanks, John.
All right, Mikey Vandalism with his thoughts on thumbs up and thumbs down. And it's that easy. That easy to do. All you got to do is send us your MP3, and then we play it here on the air just like we would take your email and or your telephone call. So that's a different way that you can reach us here on the program. Like that. Very good. He MP3s PFW all the time, doesn't he?
They're always premium,
premium quality.
Can't get my voice that high.
I know. I can't either. What does he do? Does he, like, suck helium from a balloon or something before he does that? I don't know. Man. Either that or he hasn't reached puberty yet, one or the other. Sorry, Mikey. We might be jealous. Who knows? Thank you for the MP3. That's good. Good stuff. All right. And your takes are well taken. Let's do this then. Let's also go to Dean Pease, who's the Patriots' defensive coordinator. He met with members of the media yesterday as well, and we get his thoughts on where the Patriots are at bye week time, midway point of the season now. And, of course, getting ready for the Miami Dolphins and that wildcat offense that the Dolphins had last year that seemed to really give the Patriots trouble last year, did it not? And then we'll come back and return with some more emails here. Here's Dean Pease.
Hey, Dean, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Doing well. Just a quick question for you just on watching the games or calling the games from up top the last couple of weeks. How do you feel like that's helped you and made you guys more efficient, I guess?
Well, I just think the advantage of it is the ability to just to see the game and to see the personnel changes and see the formations, just to see the game, period. And then also feel, you know, very comfortable with the guys down below being able to, you know, make adjustments and for us to communicate and them to talk to the players. And they've been doing a very good job of doing that, and you know, obviously Bill's down there too, and can make adjustments and tell guys certain things. So it's I think so far it's worked out pretty good.
Dean, for this week, when you're trying to prepare against all but Miami, but also the Wildcat, can you look at film of what other teams have done against other Wildcats, or is Miami different, where you can only kind of focus in on what if teams have kind of tried against just Miami in that offense?
Yeah, I think what you do is when you're playing a team, you really kind of focus on just that team that you're playing and how they run their particular offense or their particular sets. Now, you know, you also look at teams that they've played and the success or the lack of success that maybe they've had playing certain fronts or certain coverages or certain techniques. And, you know, everybody always tries to look at, you know, what you can do to help yourself stop, you know, the team. But I think just, you know, watching somebody else's Wildcat or, for that matter, any formation can be totally different with two different teams. And like I say, that's not only Wildcat. That could be just a two-back pro formation or a slot formation what one team does could be just so entirely different than the way another team runs that same pro and slot formation. So I think you always really kind of study the team that you're playing and what they want to do from it and their personnel and how it fits that particular set.
Dean, how impressed with you? Obviously, you're just starting to look at the tape, but the Jets seem to bring a lot of their defensive personnel down into the box to fill in those extra gaps against the Wildcat. How impressed with you were the job they did yesterday? And that kind of, going into the game, emphasized that you might maybe have to bring some more guys down there?
Well, again, I think you do whatever your personnel dictates that you do. You know, whether that's bringing extra guys down the box, whether that's whatever that might be. Obviously, they held them yardage-wise very, very well. I thought they played them pretty well. And, it's a hard believe that they lost a game when you hold a team to 104 yards of total offense. But, hey, that's, you got to do all the things in every aspect of the game. But, I thought they did a good job. And I think, again, it's you have to do what your personnel dictates and allows you to do. And so obviously I'm not privy to their game plan, but evidently Rex felt that that was something they needed to do and could do, and I thought they were very successful with it.
Do you feel, because like you just said, with all this stuff that they're going to throw at you, like your players need to be, and I guess you always want to be sharp, but real sharp this week as far as making adjustments and maybe the sideline needs to be sharp with as far as substituting if the quarterback comes off the field and all that stuff?
Yeah, but I really think that goes, really every week. When you see teams that have multiple personnel groups on offense, especially, you always have to be sharp, and our guys have to do a great job of communicating. And obviously tackling is going to be an issue this week, as it is every week. But, you're facing two very, very – excellent running backs here that doesn't matter which one of them's got the ball. And really, I think receiver-wise, down the field, these guys can stretch you. I know they haven't necessarily always done that, but, there were some plays in that Jets game. Now, there were guys, receivers behind the defensive backs. They just didn't hit them. So it still scares the heck out of you when you're watching the film and watching a guy run by a guy. So, I think, we always have to be sharp, and our communication's got to really be good.
Dean, Kelly Vanta-Kane's had a nice start to the season. How much, what has been the most pleasant surprise to you in his performance to this point?
Who was that, Mike? I didn't quite get it.
It's Tully Vanta-Kane.
Oh, Tully?
Yeah.
I think Tully did a good job when he was here before, and I know he's had, like you say, he's had a good start to the season. But I think the thing with Tully is he came into a situation knowing already about the situation when he came back from San Francisco. So, he's worked real hard. I think he's prepared very hard. I think he knew what the expectations were coming back here. So, he knows what Bill wants and what we expect. And so I think, he adapted so easy because we already all knew him and knew what he could do and what his strengths and weaknesses were. And I think he's tried to work on his weaknesses and try to improve just like all the other players. So, I think he's had some, excellent games. I think he's had some so-so games just like, all of us. But, he's working real hard, and that's the biggest key.
Dean, would you say you've used a lot of different groupings in the secondary through the first part of the season? Would you say that's a case more of trying to figure out the best combination or more adapting your secondary personnel to the opponent you're playing? What I mean by that is, do you kind of feel like you have the secondary group more defined than you did at the beginning of the season?
No, I wouldn't say it's necessarily more defined. I think it's the latter of what you had said there, that every week you're trying to look at what is the best matchup that you can possibly have, whether that be linebacker, whether that be secondary, what front you're going to play, what coverages you're going to play. All those things come into account. And then maybe certain weeks, certain coverages, these guys are a little bit better at playing that coverage, and we're going to kind of concentrate more on that coverage. A lot of it depends on maybe who the receivers are, what their formations. There's just so many things that you take into account when you put your personnel on the field, and that's really what you're trying to do, is put the best personnel that you can put on the field for a particular whether it be personnel group that they have or just overall scheme or whatever it might be. And I think that's, you know, one of the things you try to do as a coach. And so sometimes that means different combinations of different people in there. And I don't think it's any that we're, you know, ever down on one guy or high on another guy. It's just, well, this guy might do this little thing a little better, and that's kind of something that we need this week. And that's kind of why you've seen, you know, a multitude of different personnel groups. But that's not only in secondary. That's kind of across the board.
Dean, Ron Brace, we haven't seen him since week two. What's been keeping him off the field? What does he need to be doing better to see some time?
Well, I think, you know, Ron's working hard. I mean, he's learning the system, and you know, he's doing a good job in there. I think it's just been a matter, again, Mike, of us trying to say who kind of fits the role that we need this week in this particular spot. And so it may not necessarily have anything to do with whether Ron has not done well or has done well. It's more a fact of this guy kind of fits what we want there. Again, he's working real hard. He's working, you know, every day. He's in here all the time. He's studying. He's doing a good job. It's just a matter of, you know, you just never know when you might see him. So just like kind of all the players, there's nothing negative there. It's just a matter of we've been using some other guys in certain positions because we need them to fill a certain role.
On the flip side then, Dean, we haven't seen a little bit more of Pryor. What's he done well to kind of earn that time, and what do you see from him?
Again, Myron's doing a good job. I think, again, those guys are going to, you know, they'll work their way into the system. And it just a lot of times depends on the front that we're playing. Maybe we have a better grouping with a certain group of guys, or a lot of the times it's based on the offensive personnel. Will this guy hold up against their offensive tackle or guard or tight end or whoever it might be? And that's, we just try to figure out and do the best job that we can as a coaching staff of, these are the guys that need to fit in there, and sometimes that means your role is really increased, and sometimes it's decreased. And, you know, I don't think that's ever going to change, but, again, in both of their cases, Pryor and Brace, you know, we're happy with them. They're working very hard. They're doing well. It's just a matter of, I think Myron played quite a bit in this last game in our sub package, so we felt like, okay, well, he gives us a little something because of the way we were going to play a certain front that he – that was kind of his role in the Tampa game. So that can change, you know, week to week. But, again, we're pleased with both Ron and Myron.
Thank you, Coach. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks a lot.
All right, Dean Pease, Patriots defensive coordinator, with his thoughts on perhaps getting set for the Dolphins and some of the philosophy involved there as well. All right, let's finish up here with some emails before we wrap up the program today. And thank you for everyone who has contributed here. It's a good turnout in terms of our thumbs up and thumbs down philosophy today with the Patriots players. Strippers says, exceeded my own expectations, Brandon McGowan by a mile. Brandon Merriweather, Gary Guyton, Julian Edelman, and Myron Pryor. So he's listed them, McGowan, Merriweather, Guyton, Edelman, Pryor, in that order. And then he says, those who stink, which I assume means thumbs down, Adalys Thomas. All right, fair enough. Shane in Miami. Thumbs up to Randy Moss. I know that statistically this is not a great year, but I think he is doing more of the small things to help the team, blocking, decoying, helping the younger players, etc. Thumbs down to Pierre Woods. I really thought he would have a good year this year, but he has done next to nothing. You know, I will chime in here on this one, Shane. I guess I also am a little bit disappointed in Pierre Woods because I thought he'd have a perfect opportunity to claim an outside linebacking spot, especially with this team starting the year looking like they were going to play more 4-3. And I don't know that he ever really seized advantage of that opportunity. He also could be, and he's done exceedingly well on special teams. He leads the team right now in special teams tackles, in case you were not aware. So he seems to have fulfilled a role, and I'm not sure that it's a role that he might be able to expand upon here in New England. Now, I could be wrong, but they've just decided, apparently, that his best role is the role in which he currently resides, which is special teams and backup at outside linebacker, and that's really kind of where they've had him. This one comes from Elgidio, who knows, from Pontchartrain, Louisiana. Says, great show, John. You are a cool guy. Well, thank you. Even though I probably butchered your name. I'm sorry. Not like that motor mouth Andy Hart. Like that one. Anyway, thumbs up to Tully Bantakane, who has provided what little pass rush the Patriots have had. Thumbs down to Nick Caserio, who did not provide the best quarterback in the NFL with good wide receivers to throw to. Ooh. All right, so, you know, we had a chance to hear from Nick today here in the playbook, and a little thumbs down to Nick. Well, let's put it this way. Did they hit on Joey Galloway? No. Did they miss on Joey Galloway? Yeah. Is that an organizational thing, or is that a Nick Caserio thing? Well, make no mistake about this, Elgidio. Make no mistake about it, okay? The final call rests with the man named Belichick. That being said, I'm sure plenty of thought process went into deciding in the first place that he still had some gas left in the tank. And I guess you'd have to, you know, at least give part of the blame to Nick on that one. But, no, this was an organizational decision, so that's one that they probably all missed on, and not just Nick Caserio. John, in Grand Junction, we were talking earlier about Julius Peppers. And the question was whether or not we think that, you know, would the Patriots have improved in terms of their pass rush if they had actually decided to go that route and try to bring him in. And Eric was a little bit nonchalant about Peppers and his effect. And John says, Peppers had a slow start learning a new defense with Ron Meeks. However, he's been on fire the last 4 weeks, so Scalavino doesn't know what he's talking about. Peppers' stats, 7 sacks, 22 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, 1 safety, 1 block, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. He is still the best defensive tackle in football. Well, he has come on the last couple of weeks, and I think a lot of that has to do with the increased, or at least the better play by the Panthers overall. But I still have to say that, you know, and I'm not just necessarily defending Eric's stance here, but when you look at it from an overall point of view, the impression is that he hasn't been the impact player that he once was. And maybe that is because the team has struggled on the field, at least, you know, up to this point in time. Mike, I really feel as though the scouting department dropped the ball this year after seeing all the players we have signed and given up draft picks for. Galloway, Burgess, Greg Lewis, Alex Smith, Sands, only to name a few. That's another, I guess, thumbs down for the scouting department and or Nick Caserio. Yeah, you'd have to say Galloway, sure. Burgess, I think they knew what they were getting. I'm just not sure we knew what we were getting. Greg Lewis, well, okay. Frankly, I think Greg Lewis, based on what we've seen, would have been a better keep than Galloway, but maybe that, again, would qualify as a miss, you know, from the scouting department. Scouting is an inexact science. Guy that you may love may not necessarily get the chance to get it done. Patriots have had way more hits than misses over the years. So maybe the law of averages has to come down somewhat. Todd writes this. John, a thumbs up and thumbs down. I always focus on young players because I enjoy the draft, and I think it's the cheapest way to build the core of your team. Thumbs up, Brandon Merriweather. I thought people were nuts in his rookie year when draft gurus compared him to Ed Reed, but I think we're starting to see a little Ed Reed in Merriweather. Thumbs down on Lawrence Twinkletoes Maroney. When he came out, his style was compared to Marion Barber or even Gale Sayers for his upright running style. Unfortunately, dancing and running upright is a bad combo. I believe Maroney is weak mentally. He listens to what people say about him and is hurt by it. He isn't tough physically. He doesn't have a football mentality, and this is one thing that can't be taught. Todd, I can't disagree with any of that, to be quite honest with you, and I'll leave that where it is. And then we're going to wrap up here with Craig from North Carolina, who says, realistically, Thomas did not fit in early on and was out of his element in the middle. We're talking about Adalys Thomas earlier. At the beginning of the year, he was excited at the prospect of proving that he was not a bust at outside linebacker. He has yet to do that. He has played well, but he is getting paid a salary typically designated for playmakers. I love AT, but... or AD, as the guys call him, but he needs to grab the bull by the horns and make a name for himself. With all the veteran leadership flowing out of the veins of Gillette Stadium, he has passed up an opportunity to be the leader of our defense. I think that's an opportunity that a guy like Merriweather has taken control of, to be honest with you. And speaking of grabbing the bull by the horns, Maroney has failed to do so. Maybe he should try to win Dancing with the Stars. I've always given the players the benefit of the doubt because I realize that as smart as we fans and media think we are privy to very little player information. It's a good point, Craig. Injuries are not the only mystery. Who shows up late for meetings, takes plays off in practice, shows leadership, minor discipline problems, are all causes of healthy scratches, being inactive and not starting. Disappointments. Maroney first, Sanders second. I thought he was going to lead the secondary this year. Pleasant surprises. McGowan first, Merriweather second. Mayo. He was great last year. He came back early from injury and is playing well and not getting much attention because of the level of our competition. And then he says, how do you guys think we should handle our kickoffs? Ginn can't catch a cold, but he is very dangerous in the return game. Line drives? Nope. I would say, Craig, that Steve Gostkowski needs to boot it out of the back of the end zone. He's got one of the best legs. He's got one of the strongest legs amongst all kickers in the NFL. And the way that you solve Ted Ginn going 100 or 101 yards against you is by kicking the doggone ball, you know, 5-plus yards deep into the end zone. Patriots are 20th defensively in kick coverage return, giving up almost 24 yards per kick return. That'll definitely be a part of the game plan that we'll want to watch on Sunday and a part that, you know, potentially the Dolphins could expedite or could exploit, I should say. And so because of that, I think it'll be incumbent upon Gostkowski to hit some boomers on Sunday. Wraps it up for this edition of Patriots Playbook. We'll be back tomorrow, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Our guest list is still in flux. Is that correct, Doc?
Yes, it is.
Okay. But we will have somebody on for you, and we will talk about the Dolphins this week, and we'll get into some X's and O's, and we'll get your thoughts on getting back to AFC East family feuding with the Miami Dolphins coming up this Sunday.